वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशाम् एष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः ग्रन्थराज श्रीमद्भागवतम् This is Canto 5, Chapter 13, entitled Rahugana Converses with Jadabharat. Today we're on the concluding verse of the chapter, text number 26, which is prose. I'll quickly repeat that, and then we can read the translation and purport, short purport, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. राजोवाच यः वा यः बहुविधा महाभागवत त्वयाभिहितः परोक्षेण वचसा जीवलोकभवाद्वा सह्यार्यमनीषया कल्पितविषयो नाञ्जसाद्युत्पन्नलोकसमधिगमः अथ तद् एवैतद्दृढवगमं समवेतानुकल्पेन निर्दिश्यताम् इति ट्रान्स्लेशन् King Parikshit then told Shukdev Goswami, My dear Lord, O great devotee sage, you are omniscient. You have very nicely described the position of the conditioned soul, who is compared to a merchant in the forest. From these instructions, intelligent men can understand that the senses of a person in the bodily conception are like rogues and thieves in that forest. And one's wife and children are like jackals and other ferocious animals. However, it is not very easy for the unintelligent to understand the purport of this story because it is difficult to extricate the exact meaning from the allegory. I therefore request Your Holiness to give the direct meaning. Let's repeat this. King Parikshit then told Shukdev Goswami, My dear Lord, O great devotee sage, you are omniscient. You have very nicely described the position of the conditioned soul who is compared to a merchant in the forest. From these instructions, intelligent men can understand that the senses of a person in the bodily conception are like rogues and thieves in that forest. And one's wife and children are like jackals and other ferocious animals. However, it is not very easy for the unintelligent to understand the purport of this story because it is difficult to extricate the exact meaning from the allegory. I therefore request Your Holiness to give the direct meaning. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. There are many stories and incidents in Srimad Bhagavatam that are described figuratively. Such allegorical descriptions may not be understood by unintelligent men. Therefore, it is the duty of the student to approach a bona fide spiritual master for the direct explanation. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Further Talks Between King Rahugana and Jarabharata. Om Jnanatimanandhasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Shri Chaitanya Marobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Pradamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yudhapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanusute Devi Pranamani Hari Priye Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripasindhubhya evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. King Parikshit then told Shukadeva Goswami, My dear Lord, O great devotee sage, you are omniscient. You very nicely described the position of the conditioned soul, who's compared to a merchant in the forest. From these instructions, intelligent men can understand that the senses of a person in the bodily conception are like rogues and thieves in the forest, and one's wife and children are like jackals and other ferocious animals. However, it is not very easy for the unintelligent to understand the purport of this story, because it is difficult to extricate the exact meaning from the allegory. I therefore request your holiness to give your direct meaning. This is the intro, I guess you can say, to the next chapter. The next chapter is entitled The Material World as the Great Forest of Enjoyment. And for those of us who are less intelligent, it unpacks the instructions already given in this verse or in this chapter. Some very significant things here in this simple verse and simple purport. Simple doesn't always mean less valuable. It's very deep what Srila Prabhupada said here. So we'll go through each of these words, each of these sentences. First of all, he's addressing his spiritual master, Shukadeva Goswami. This is Parikshit Maharaj. We've been hearing the conversation between Jarabharata and Rahugana Maharaj. Of course, you know the story. It spans over roughly half a dozen chapters in the 5th canto. A lot of attention given to this story. Rahugana Maharaj was an ordinary king. Where was he the king? Who remembers? We heard this yesterday or the day before. Salvira, where is Salvira? Huh? Yes, Gujarat. Modern day Gujarat and also Sindh. Kutch, you might say. So he was the king of that place. Somehow, Jagadharat found himself there. He was deliberately acting throughout his life like a deaf mute, stupid person, retarded, crazy person, deliberately, just so that he would be aloof from the mundane society. It gives us a hint of just how seriously we have to take this principle of the contamination that always results from embracing mundane association. I always feel when we are chanting every morning, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chite Te Koriya Aikya Arana Koriho Mani Asha. It's a very simple, again, simple instruction, but extremely deep instruction. Because most of us, I mean, I can speak for myself only, actually. But Krishna gives the facts and figures also in Bhagavad Gita. The statistics are there. That most people have other priorities than hearing from the spiritual master. They want to hear from Facebook or from the news or from whatever, the price of gold or the latest gossip in the neighborhood or so many things that we give our attention to instead of just hearing from the spiritual master. The most often quoted and, the most often lectured upon verse in the Bhagavad Gita is chapter 7, text number 1. Yatha jñāsasi tatshṛṇu. If you really want to know this, Arjun, just hear. Just listen. Śrīla Prabhupāda spoke on this verse more than any other from Bhagavad Gita. And it's interesting that Śrīla Prabhupāda indicates the same need in his purport when he says, such allegorical descriptions may not be understood by unintelligent men, therefore it is the duty of the student to approach a bona fide spiritual master for direct explanation. This is the Tadvidhi Pranipatena principle, also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4. So Srila Prabhupada could have said here, he might have written, that it's the duty of all devotees, or spiritual masters especially, to preach this message. We also get this instruction throughout his books. But he's not saying that. He's saying that it's the duty to submissively hear. Because most of the time, we need to hear. Sometimes we might observe. Ritvik ideology. There are many ways you can define a Ritvik. One is that he wants to speak more than he wants to hear. That will suffice for the circumstances at present. But anyway, this is one thing we can appreciate here, that although Shukdev Goswami has certainly spoken very nicely, and Jagadharat has also spoken very nicely, we have to be sensitive also to the potential audience here. Because Bhagavad Gita was not only spoken for Arjuna. In fact, it was mainly spoken for whom? For whom did Krishna speak Bhagavad Gita? All of us. All of us. Because we're in this category. Srila Prabhupada is talking about the person in the bodily conception of life. We have this bodily conception of life. If you don't realize this deeply enough yet, you will. The process of material nature is so made that you will be worn down just through the process of Maya over time, and you will struggle to maintain your sanity, your bodily functions, your ordinary daily activities. What to speak of the things that we really prioritize, like our bank balance, our prestige, we have to have political support, we need friends, and so many other things, isn't it? These are the things that we hear submissively about. So, he's describing that less intelligent people, that is to say, those who have this bodily conception of life, in other words, us, most of us, this is very relevant for us. Now, another thing is there that an unintelligent person may find it hard to understand why one's wife and children are considered to be jackals and ferocious animals. This is one of those offensive statements in Srila Prabhupada's books, if you're approaching it from the bodily concept of life. Therefore, Sridhar Swami commenting on this verse, the first thing he says, actually, Aryanam vivekinam manisha yaiva dasyustani priyani gomayustani yanyat apatya ityadinam. So, one's relatives, I mean, you can extend it even further than that. It's not just one's wife and children, it's one's friends, one's relatives, society, friendship, love. These are the things that impel us or compel us to act in this material world and to maintain our entanglement within it. These are the things that are like the ferocious animals that eat us up. They consume our time. They consume our attention. They eat us. I mean, there was one Chinese revolutionary, not revolutionary, but he was adopted by Mao Zedong and the communists in the middle of the last century. His name was Lu Xun. So he wrote a book about this, that he was walking down the street, everybody he saw them as a cannibal. Person is ready to eat me. If you need to have this experience, then visit New York City. Visit even Delhi, for that matter. Closer to home. Any of the big cities, materialistic cities especially of the world, there's something about village life that does not engender this vicious mentality so much. Maybe it's because when we more directly depend on God, we have a greater sense of humility and maybe also sensitivity to others. Of course, in the Kali Yuga, even that is very difficult. Anyway, so everyone is a cannibal, actually, everyone that we see. And actually, we are also the same way. When we enter into any situation, we immediately begin calculating what's in it for me. What can this person do to me? Or what can I get from this person? How can I manipulate the situation so as to maximize my own self-aggrandizement? This is the idea. This is cannibalism. It's envy. And on the other hand, the person who is spiritually really realized, Krishna says, na kankshati, na shochati. He doesn't whine or complain about his karma. He doesn't hanker after that he doesn't have. Kankshati means to hanker after something. I've got to have it. There are people in this world who are so illusioned that they believe that unless I get a new car every year, I mean, it's a fate worse than death. There are people who actually get that entangled. Such people exist. In many cases, they're actually running this world. That's pretty scary. Anyway, we can go into a lot of things about that, but I'll park that and wait for another lecture. The idea here is that we also have this tendency. Nunam pramatta kurate vikarma yadindriya pritaya aprinoti. Because we have the bodily misconception of life, we are cemented into this karnamatmaka mentality. What does Rishabhdev say earlier in this canto? The mind becomes tainted or colored with this fruitive endeavor. It's so subtle that we can't even see it. The psychologists like to tell us that self-awareness is the first principle of therapy. You have to be aware of yourself. And we're not aware of ourselves. What does Krishna list in Bhagavad Gita as the symptoms of knowledge? Anybody know? So many things. Well, actually, I'm sorry, not the symptoms of knowledge, but the godly qualities that are mentioned in chapter 16. Anyone? Abhayam. First thing is to be fearless, because Ishadapeta, as soon as you turn away from God, then immediately you have to become fearful of who's going to get you or what's going to happen next, because we don't know. We're actually just tiny little jivas. Everything is handed to us. We have no control over it. Therefore, we're fearful in this material world. And then the second thing is, I want to say, more interesting. Sattva samshuddhi. Sattva samshuddhi. What does that mean? Sattva samshuddhi. What does sattva mean? Huh? Goodness. No. Not in this context. Quality of existence, maybe, but existence, period. Sattva. That thing which exists, it's called, you know, existence. Sattva. Beingness. We might give it a literal translation. Satta, it's also sometimes called. It's the same thing. So we have to purify our existence, which means we have to be aware that our existence is currently not purified. This is the essential bedrock assumption of all the vidhis and the nishedhas that we find throughout the shastras. In the shastras, we find so many do's and don'ts. That's called vidhi, is the positive injunction. Nishedha means the negative prohibition. And logically, this is called anvayavyatireki, pervasion. You have to cover every base, positive, negative, direct and indirect. So you give the positive instruction, you also give its negative counterpart. That's what does the trick. And Srila Prabhupada said in Krishna consciousness also, we have this. We have the positive injunctions, we have the negative prohibitions. We avoid the four sinful activities, and we chant the holy name of Krishna daily, regularly, always. Kirtaniya sada harihi. This is the injunction. So, in these shastras we find many rules and regulations describing who in what position should do what. That means that we have to know what our position is in order to know which rules to follow. On a swadharma level, that is to say, on the level of personal application of dharma. Of course, paro dharma is equally applicable to everyone, but it doesn't always manifest in equal ways. This is an important point also. That is going to depend on the modes of nature. In other words, your sattva, not sattva guna, but your existence. You may be circumstantially, or maybe I want to say coincidentally, you may be in sattva guna, although very few in today's world are, frankly. More likely we are in rajoguna and especially tamoguna. Of course, those who are the most advanced people in today's world, they're the ones who break out of tamoguna and get into the mode of passion a little bit. Practically speaking, sattvaguna is a lost cause in this yuga. It doesn't really manifest that much. So what are the chances of us attaining to shuddha sattva? Hope against hope. Those are our chances. Those are our chances, according to Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Samrita Sindhu. So, I don't want to get too far afield here. We're talking about how everyone externally, these are the adhibhautic miseries. Externally, everyone is out to get us. Everyone is envious. Let's say you get some nice position, what you want in the world, but then you've got to deal with the envious people who also want what you have. And you know the numbers. It would take the additional resources of 5 extra planet Earths in order to replicate the paradigm of demographic transition from a pre-industrial to a post-industrial society worldwide. That means there's just not enough to go around, folks. And those who take more than they actually need, as is discussed in the Ishopanishad, they will find people breaking down their doors trying to get their fair share. Because at the current moment, I heard a figure somewhere, 1% of the world's population has what is it? Anybody know this? Over 50% of the resources. And we're producing so much garbage. We means this modern civilization that we've all largely bought into. This is another thing to consider. we are patronizing this system unless and until we actually take Srila Prabhupada's instructions on simple living and high thinking more seriously. And we are getting the reactions for that because it is not authorized by Guru Sadhu Shastra. I mean, you can practice Yukta Vairagya, we like to call it, to some degree, but if it becomes an infinite perpetual paradigm, then it becomes something more like not karma yoga, but vikarma yoga. And of course, there's no such thing as vikarma yoga. The shastras don't describe such an entity. Anyway, so when we are in the bodily concept of life, the senses and the mind demand what they demand, and we will do anything in order to fulfill those needs because we're, after all, servants. Therefore, the word is used here, dasyubihi. Thieves, rogues, they plunder us, and we willingly, yes. This is the brilliant plan of Maya in the modern day and age especially. I think it was Rabindranath Tagore who said, I feel freedom in the bonds of 1,000 worldly joys. Of course, that's not Krishna conscious ideology. But this is how we are ensnared. The latest gadget, the latest smartphone or the car or the whatever it is that we all run after. These are the things by which we're controlled. And we haven't even started talking about the Internet of Things. Does everyone know about the Internet of Things? Nowadays, whenever you buy a modern appliance, that appliance has embedded within it some internet connectivity that collects data about not only your usage, but in some cases, it has voice recognition software. It's collecting all kinds of information about you. This is especially computers, also cell phones. It's well known we can track anyone by their cell phone. Even a washing machine knows your dirty laundry very well. And that information is being collected and it's being sent potentially to the internet by who knows who. We have no idea. So the Internet of Things means this principle of embedding internet connectivity into all things modern, especially appliances and gadgets of a technological sort. That's pretty scary. Because, you know, if you consider that we're living in a cannibalistic world, what are they going to do with that information? Identity theft is a major concern in the modern world. And this is an aspect of that. Anyway, so we, as long as we buy into this system of the whole concept of infinite sense gratification via modern technology, especially, then we are being plundered by rogues. And not only in this sense, but in the socioeconomic sense, but in terms of chronology, we have a limited amount of time. This human form of life is a short window of opportunity, and it will not last. What are the requirements to become Krishna conscious? You have to be a human being, first of all. How do we define humanity? What are the system requirements in order to run human software? You have to be following dharma. You have to have a working mind and working senses. You have to be basically in good order. And all of that is rotting right now. While you're still in the body, it's all rotting. And what old age means, it reaches a critical mass. It reaches a certain phase at which it just becomes overwhelming. Sometimes when people get old, they kill themselves because they just cannot handle the struggle of existing. I mentioned earlier what they call in the healthcare profession activities of daily living. If you can't even do these things, like taking a bath, drinking water normally, I mean, simple things that we all take for granted. Hearing what the person next to you is saying. Being able to articulate your voice without slurring your words. I took care of my mother until she died for many years. And old people forget to drink. When you get senile, you forget to do things. So they forget to drink water and they become, what happens when you don't drink water? You get dehydrated. What are the symptoms of dehydration? Among them, you go nuts. And your motor functions are incapacitated. And I mean, things we all take for granted. But these things are not granted. I mean to say, they are granted for as long as your karma lasts. And that karma may run out even before old age. Anyone who has been through Saturn period knows a little bit about this. Or Ketu or Rahu. They do the same thing. These are the Krura Grahas. So, Jabalaga Taname Tapana Vyape Tabalaga Karihari Seva. One poet said, you know, as long as you have, you know, this good facility, use it now. Use it wisely. Don't squander it. This is the point. Otherwise, you become like a person whose own senses are robbing him of his real wealth, which is your potential, spiritual potential. It only lasts a few years, very, very short time, and time speeds up as you get old. You will recognize as that happens. You see? So, and when we have the exploitive mentality, then also, when we have this, when we are absorbed in the bodily concept of life, then the others are eating us, we're also trying to eat the others. This is the mess that we're in. Therefore, it's rightly compared to a forest, wild animals. All of us. Or as we say also, dvipada pashu. So the king is asking, Maharaj Parikshit is asking Shukdev Goswami in much the same way that Rahugana Maharaj was asking Jadabharat, please explain to me. At first, Rahugana Maharaj was actually offensive to Jadabharat, and understandably so, because Jadabharat was acting in a way that you wouldn't think. Be careful. You never know who's sitting next to you. That person may even be Narayana. You don't know. The Lord has infinite incarnations, and to different degrees also. This is described scientifically in great detail by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Laghu Bhagavatamrita. You cannot discount the possibility that you're sitting next to a demigod or a Mahabhagavata or a highly advanced personality of some sort. So we have to be very careful. And Rahugana learned this lesson, fortunately, and he begged pardon. How many people do we offend and never even realize it? Even if they complain about us. So this is the thickness of tamoguna. This is our problem. So while we have the opportunity, we can try to follow in the footsteps, just as Rahugana Maharaj. He repeated his questions when it wasn't clear to him. Parikshit Maharaj is also repeating, I would like to hear this in more detail. And he says that not everybody is Viveka, not everybody is an Arya, not everybody is Manisha, smart, that is to say, or advanced. And that should give us sensitivity into the modern world as well. There are people who are far more advanced than we are. And there are also people who are not as advanced as we are. We have to show mercy, and we have to repeat these instructions to those who are less advanced, and we have to hear submissively from those who are more advanced. This is the idea, or it's the ideal given in our shastras. What else can we say about this? Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is explaining in his commentary here that the reason that he hasn't been able to understand what has been presented here is because there is no drishtanta. Drishtanta means a practical example. We heard very, very wise words the other day from my godbrother Kshuti Prabhu, who said that it is one thing to understand what the capacity of an electrical outlet is. If you stick a fork in it and experience that potential, that's another experience altogether, isn't it? It's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to actually feel that pain. So, therefore, we have these miseries of material existence because most of us have to learn this way. And that certifies each of us as less intelligent. So, he's saying, please unpack this for the less intelligent people That means us. Now the next chapter is going to be very, very interesting. More of the same, but in greater detail. So I'll try not to spoil the plot. I will stop here, unless anybody has any questions or comments. Yes, Prabhuji in French, Brahmachari. Microphone.